Hi, I'm Jennifer Osborne. This is the Conversations of Hope podcast, stories of hope as told by those who live them.
How are you?
I'm good. Good.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. So tell me a little bit about you and your life now and where you're from and wherever you want to jump in at.
I grew up in upstate New York, and we lived there till I was about 8 years old. Lived in a perfect neighborhood. It was kind of like one entrance into all the different cul-de-sacs. So everybody kind of knew everyone. Everyone went to the same church, same school. We had lots of friends in the neighborhood, and it was just sort of a picturesque kind of scenario to grow up in. I have one older sister and two parents who are still alive. So, yeah, it kind of was an ideal place to grow up. And then in 1984, we moved to Cincinnati.
So what happened when you were, was 6 years old?
Yeah.
So talk about that a little bit.
So there were two male babysitters that sexually abused me around the ages of 6 and 7. I remember vividly the first boy. I don't recall actually what happened, but I do remember having him over to our house with his parents. We confronted that this thing had happened. He was very remorseful, and we just sort of went on from there. Fortunately, I don't recall what happened, but I know something did. It was inappropriate. And all this came out when my mom was reading me a book called Good Touch, Bad Touch. So as she got towards the end of the book, I think she had said, hey, has anything like this ever happened to you? Or has anyone tried to kind of come on to you like this? And I sort of opened up in that moment and told her that, you know, some things had happened, which kind of started that first confrontation that I just talked about. And then the second one was the one that did the most harm, but was actually never confronted. So the perpetrator that sexually abused me several times, lived up the hill from me, babysat me and my sister. His father had dealt with some health issues. So my parents were concerned if they brought this up to them that his health could even deteriorate more. So they regret this to this day. But unfortunately, people don't always know what to do or how to act around these situations. And I think that was one of those situations where they just didn't know what to do. And so that always kind of gave me a sense of that this thing just never was like handled properly, you know, and I was just supposed to kind of just deal with it on my own. So fast forward, I don't know, a handful of months, we ended up moving to Cincinnati, and that just sort of put all of that, you know, behind us. Unfortunately, that stuff just doesn't go away and sticks with all of us our entire lives for the most part.
So you moved to Cincinnati. You go through some counseling at that point. Mm-hmm. So your mom had found a counselor, obviously wanted to move you to a place of processing the trauma. Mm-hmm. What was your experiences like early on with therapy and how did that all work?
A lot of it was just me sitting in a room, not doing a whole lot of talking. The counselor's trying to pry things out of me. In the end, probably just felt like a waste of time and a waste of money. Unfortunately, I think that's all too common. That a lot of these counselors say they have expertise in this area of sexual trauma, but they don't. It's sort of a check the box sort of deal. And as I've learned through lots of different resources and experts, that you really do need to be trained well in this topic to help people through this process. I also think I was probably a little too young to even understand like what had happened. I knew that I was confused. I knew I was terrified. Especially by the perpetrator that did those harmful things to me. I remember him driving around the neighborhood and, you know, just sort of that blood-boiling feel that you have. And him telling me that, hey, if I tell someone, you know, he's going to kind of hurt me kind of thing. And that's very typical for people to put on the victims. I don't think I was even prepared to, like, talk about it or even, like, know how to process it with someone that was in the counseling, you know, environment.
So fast forward a little bit into high school. Talk about that a little bit. So.
Yeah, I don't think I didn't have a ton of confidence going into a lot of situations, sports, school, which I think a lot were directly connected to that. I just, an early age just was very confused, and I didn't know why this had happened. And so it just put me in a lot of awkward situations, I feel like. And I started to manifest a lot of those feelings with anger. And I wasn't sharing this information with anyone. It's really hard to share with your friends, especially when you're in grade school and high school and college, because a lot of your friends don't even know what to do with it. And you need to have that trust to actually tell them. So I remember vividly a time where I ripped the door off the hinges of my bedroom. My mom and my sister were at the base of the stairs, just terrified, kind of looking in my eyes, you know, and that was a low point for sure. As I got into high school and college, I would say drinking was a big just mechanism for me to kind of cope with the pain that I had felt and experienced. That was just sort of bottling up. So I was getting into a lot of just reckless behavior, whether that was hooking up or drinking a lot to the point of passing out, getting behind the wheel, wrecking multiple cars. Fortunately, I never got a DUI or killed anyone or killed myself. But it was just this like ongoing perpetual thing that like, well, I guess just this is how it is. And this is just who I am. You know, I'm a kind of party guy, but on the inside, I was just getting super empty. And just meaning for life just felt like, man, is this all I got? I remember driving in the car with my mom at one point in high school after getting in some trouble with the police. And I said, like, man, I just wish I would just fly through this windshield, you know? And while that was just a feeling in the moment, to look back and know that, like, that was something I would say just as, I'm glad I've come a long way, because that was a dark spot for me. And I think that, the compression of all these feelings just makes you want to explode, you know? What do you do with that when the world just tells you to like get over it or move on or just figure this thing out on your own? And I've learned that community is a big part of getting through all this.
So you told someone, like, you'd been drinking a little bit, and you admitted for the first time to someone what had happened. While I don't want to.
Yeah. That was my best friend. And we were walking back from a party. Both had way too many cocktails, I'm sure. And I'm sure that's where my guard came down to say, like, okay, maybe I just like finally tell my friend, you know? And so I did. And, you know, he was shocked, like most people would be. But then we really didn't, you know, we woke up the next day and just acted like it never came up, you know? And I think that's fairly typical, unfortunately. They call it the silent epidemic. People just don't talk about it. People experience it, they just don't even know where to go. So they just end up finding coping mechanisms to get through. That could be drugs, that could be alcohol, that could be sex, that could be work. That could be lots of different things. And I sort of tried out all of those, to where I just got to a place after college. I was like, man, there's gotta be more than this. And that's when I moved back home to Cincinnati. I was out in California for a few years and got connected to Crossroads. And I think that's where God started to kind of just strip away all those things that I assumed were part of my identity. For a while, I was, I think, angry at God of like, why did this happen? Why me? And then I realized through that group that actually God was weeping alongside of me the entire time this was happening. That we talked about this earlier before, but Ephesians 2 talks about this idea that God created us. He is our workmanship, or we are his workmanship. And in the Greek term for workmanship is poem, that he created a poem for all of us individually. He created a masterpiece of art for each one of us. And I think we forget that, you know, and we take on these burdens and we take on these things that have happened to us that build and speak into our identity more than anything. And it's just a bunch of lies. And unfortunately, we live up to a lot of that stuff too and just say, well, that's just who I am. And that's how God designed me. So coming back here is where I started to really just say, okay, God, like, let's have a clean slate here. And let's start to pick apart all the things that I've accumulated over the years, because I want to just kind of do this thing on my own. I'm willing to just, as I say, just open your hands up and hand it over to God. He can take it. He wants to take your pain. And let's start dealing with this thing. And that's when I feel like my life just started to radically change.
Did that give you courage the next time when you admitted again? How God moved in that?
Yeah. So an ex-girlfriend of mine at Crossroads, I had confided in her about that. She knew that I was dealing with it, that was one of the secrets that I just had been holding on to. And so she introduced me to this child sexual trauma group that Crossroads offered, typically called CST. And so she's like, yeah, you should really check this out. And if anyone's watching and has experienced sexual trauma, it's not easy just to jump in a group, you know, about that topic. Most of us never want to talk about it. So after a couple months, I was like, all right, I'm going to give this thing a go and just try it out. And I remember vividly driving up into the parking lot, and I almost turned around a couple times and just to go home. And instead, I was like, all right, let's do this. And I walked in the room. It just felt like I had like cinder blocks on my shoulders, you know, just all that weight and all the things, the shame that I've kind of like attached onto this abuse and the confusion and complexity that I feel like I just was like part of, you know, because this thing that happened to me just sort of manifested in a way that was so unhealthy in all areas of my life. And I sort of just like dismayed this whole God thing. I knew he was still there, but the only time I would really get focused on my faith was in desperation. I would get on my knees and be like, God, you got to get me out of this situation, you know, and that's not a good place to have a relationship with God. It should be always on. And it shouldn't just be this like, hey, I need this thing from you. Can you give it to me? But that was my faith for a while. So coming into that room, just eventually just taking off that weight. And my friend Gary was sharing his story the first night. And I was like, how is this like 40-something-year-old guy talking about sexual abuse that he had? You know, and I was just blown away by his courage. Hmm. And I saw a bunch of other people in the room who showed up that night as well. And, you know, we prayed. We did some worship. We heard some professionals came in to talk about different topics. Signs and symptoms, how to actually get restored in this area of your life, different techniques to calm you down, you know, based on some of the anxiety that all of us have experienced, what to do when you get triggered, what to do around addiction and how that can play a big role into all of this. And then finally, this idea of like forgiveness, that was a huge part for me. And most people never even want to address that topic. Like, heck no, I'm not going to forgive that person that did this, you know, harmful thing to me. But what I learned from forgiveness was this idea that this event or situation in your life no longer has control over you. That's forgiveness. It's not this idea of like, okay, I see what you did there. I forgive you. Everything's okay. I think that, you know, we kind of teach kids that, hey, like, you know, you need to forgive him for stealing your candy. And like, it's kind of like that easy transaction, but that's not God's design of forgiveness. So when I realized that, no, I don't have to like think it's okay of what these perpetrators did to me and the harm they put on me, or all the people in this room that have impacted, that, you know, it's this idea of like this thing that has just been a black cloud over me for my entire life can go away and not be defining me one more minute. And that's where I feel like I just started to like take on, you know, a whole new sort of outlook on it, and my life started to change.
I want to go back to the item you just touched on with forgiveness. Talk a little bit about how it was then 10 years ago and now how you can look at that with just different eyes and how forgiveness has really brought you to a place of freedom.
Yeah, so my sister was in the house when all this was going on when I was a child, so obviously it impacted her too, and I think she sort of took on some of the burdens of like, was there something I could have done, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's been some pain in her life around that, even though she hadn't been sexually abused. And so she felt, when I was going through this group, and she felt the need to reach out to this guy and track him down through Facebook. And he actually admitted that he had abused me, and he actually has kids and, you know, a wife and all that stuff. And so at the time, I didn't feel the need to really intervene. I had learned a lot of things through that group. A lot of times you'll go, if people do confront their perpetrator, they don't actually get the response that they hope for. A lot of times the perpetrator doesn't even say sorry, or they say it never happened, or they say you are a willing participant. Mm-hmm. And those are all lies. They are controlling, they're manipulating, and our bodies are designed to react. So a lot of times when they're doing this to small children, our bodies are reacting, you know, in a sexual way. And that's how we were designed, but that's where all the confusion comes in, because it almost says like, oh no, you were in on this thing. which is complete manipulation.
Yeah,
so
totally wrong.
I didn't feel the need that I had to reach out to him. If he had said he didn't do it to my sister via Facebook threads, I probably maybe would have reached out to him. But I felt like, you know what, God's going to like take control of that situation with him. He's going to have to live with that. And in my mind, I had come to grips with a really good sense of forgiveness based on the things that I had learned in my group, that this event situation thing is not going to control me anymore.
You said you looked at that even just with that different lens than what you looked at maybe just the 10 years ago. Well, 10 years is a long time, but
yeah.
And just how God moved in that and has shown you that you're at a different place with forgiveness.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
It happens differently for everybody in every situation. But I do believe that God wants that for all of us.
Yeah.
And if we're not in a forgiving posture, it's preventing us from really good things. So that's my hope, that people go through this course and they get equipped with the right tools to where eventually they can get to that place.
And I do want to touch on one thing, like confrontation with a perpetrator mm-hmm. is not necessary to work through forgiveness or to experience freedom. Because sometimes you perpetrator may be dead and, mm-hmm. or it may not be possible or mm-hmm. it may cause just a lot of harm. I know it's a question for a lot of people that have went through some of this, like, do I confront the person that did this thing to me? And, I don't know that that's always necessary,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, because forgiveness is a process that you work through for you,
right.
But it says nothing about them,
mm-hmm.
doesn't justify and all that. So,
yeah, I agree. I think every situation is unique. And I unfortunately haven't heard of great situations that have come out of people contacting or directly meeting up with the person that harmed them. It just never seems to end well based on what's being said back and forth. So I think there's definitely different avenues to take. I would suggest that to folks. When I went through CST, I felt like God was saying, I want you to share your story with people, and there's going to be healing in that. And one of the things I did was I literally emailed my story to everybody that I had a contact for. And I also set up a Facebook group that allowed people to connect to this community, along with a fundraising campaign that would support Darkness to Light, which is all about prevention around child sexual trauma. So for me, it was this idea of like, okay, I'm going to get behind this thing and actually help other people and do something about it versus just sitting in this dark hole and pit my whole life. I don't recommend that for everybody. There are people on that list that never responded. I have no idea what their thoughts were. It was hurtful. At the same time, it introduced me to thousands of people randomly. They would just join this group and just have questions. And I almost kind of became this like almost counselor, if you will, on the other side. Even though I didn't have it all figured out, I was able to show empathy and just help them just by listening. And a lot of times that's all people want, is just someone to talk about it with. And then I would do these little benefits around town. One of my barbers in Mount Lookout said, you know, I will cut people's hair for free for the entire day, and all that can go towards your foundation. And I come to find out she had been sexually abused, you know. So again, it is everywhere, unfortunately. But I think there's ways to tackle it and to actually like be part of a solution versus always just dwelling on the past. We see this stuff all over the news, you know, whether it was Penn State or what happened to all the gymnasts who were in the Olympics, or all the stuff within the diocese or the Catholic Church. Michael Jackson, which we've heard the last couple of weeks, there's some big thing on HBO that's being released. And if you're not equipped, you're just going to constantly be dragged down into those dark places because this stuff is going to constantly resurface and it's going to re-trigger things in you. So while I don't dismiss the stuff in the news, it's still very hurtful, and I pray for those people deeply. I don't go down into those big dark spaces anymore. I can like connect with people that are in community with. I've dealt with a lot of things. I've done a lot of the work, which we'll talk about. But that's just part of the process, you know? And if people just think like, oh, I'm just going to like accept this thing, you're going to see it all over the place and you're going to continue to just bottle it up, and it's just going to manifest its way in really bad places. And there's things that you're not even aware of that it'll interfere with. It'll interfere with your job. It'll interfere with the people that you meet. It'll interfere with how you live just in your home. It'll interfere just how you're paranoid about things. It could interfere with how you relate to kids, your children. There's just intimacy with your wife or your husband. There's all sorts of things that God wants to be healthy in our life. And unfortunately, this thing just comes in and takes all that out if it's not properly dealt with.
What were some of the, like, when you were in the throes of really, like, when you were in the throes of the struggle, mm-hmm. you know, wrestling with all of these feelings, these anger, this, you know, dealing with the fallout.
Yeah.
Fallout's a good, really good word that mm-hmm. follows you around. Talk a little bit about, like, your low points. Like, what were your, like, super low points that you just were, like, trapped in?
Yeah. I mean, ripping the door off the hinges was definitely a low point. Just so much anger there. I would say wrecking my car multiple times, you know, under the influence. Again, it's just like, it's hard to look at yourself in the mirror and be like, man, like, what am I doing? You know, I didn't want people to find this thing out, you know, and if they did, what would they think of me? But ironically, like, when I started to release out, you know, this stuff that was a secret of mine, that's when I feel like God just started to kind of like pour more good things on it.
Makes me think about how when trauma happens, you take it on as an identity. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing that happened to you is your who you are. So, like you just said, what would they think of me? And I think that's a super common thing for victims when they're in these positions that becomes who they are mm-hmm. rather than something that had happened.
Yeah.
So when you were then starting to go through the process of healing, and I want to talk a little bit more about CST and why that's just such a great class, but when you were going through the process of healing, how did those things really start to change for you? Like, it wasn't your identity. It was an event that had happened, and how that God began to peel that back.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the word I use in the first class is this idea of work, you know, and sometimes people don't like that word because it sounds hard, but it's actually the best way I can describe it. But the payoff is huge. And when I say work, it means finding groups like CST that you can actually connect with. Fortunately, Crossroads offers that. I know all churches and organizations don't, but there are things out there. Finding your community of people that have actually experienced things like you so that you don't feel alone and you can actually relate to them about the things that you've experienced is huge. Reading articles, just becoming an expert on what it does to our brain, what it does to our identity. Because all that stuff is going to give you some tools to actually combat this thing. Figuring out how to pray and connect with God around this thing. How to be fully restored. How to, like, think about forgiveness. I use the analogy, you know, if you're going to war, you would never not go to war without the right tools. You would never go to war by yourself. Personally, I would always be praying, like, during that moment of, like, God, like, help me through this thing, right? I'd have some sort of strategy to get through this thing. When I trained for my first marathon, I was reading blogs. I was talking to all sorts of people that had done marathons before. I joined a running group. You know, I prayed to God on these long runs. I was praying like crazy. I was listening to some great podcasts that grew my faith. I want to be an entrepreneur, and I'm working on this new business that hopefully will launch in a couple months. And guess what? I'm talking to a ton of entrepreneurs. I'm in community with them, all people that are wiser than me, people that have gone before me. And the same goes for healing, but people won't do it. They won't put in the work. So if you really want to be healed and restored and understand your true identity and where God wants to take you, you have to do the work. Mm-hmm. And it's a variety of things. Like I said, it's counseling, finding the right people that are equipped to help you, getting in community, reading, praying, getting your core group of people that you can actually, like, connect with. So when you talk about it, they've been there, they've done that, and they've actually got some tools for you because they're experienced. You know, I've met some people at CST that have been at my wedding. You know, I mean, it's just crazy to think, like, this group that I was terrified to even go to are now some of the best people in my life.
speak to that a little bit. Like in the sharing, you found like it just opened up everything else.
Yeah, I think there's the line, you're only as sick as your secrets, you know, and I fully believe that. I think the things that we conceal from other people, the people that we love, the people at work, the people, even and God, I mean, most importantly, you know, when we start just concealing that stuff or acting like, you know, I can just do whatever I want and be disobedient and that God won't care, all that stuff just is going to spiral out of control. So I think that the more I opened up, I feel like God just continued to just pour more people in my life that that I can relate with and connect with, and that's been huge. You know, I've had the opportunity to go to India and work with some of the women over there that have been trafficked for sex, some teachers, some pastors on how to actually equip them with prevention. You know, how do we look for these blind spots where some of this stuff is happening? How do we make sure there's background checks? And for me, I'm like, man, I never would have thought that I'd actually get the opportunity to go to India to help people. And that's a lot of the stuff that Darkness to Light is doing in the States. They're doing a lot of preventative work. And I think it's chipping away. You know, we see all the nastiness in the news, but we also aren't seeing all the stories of success where this stuff has been prevented or it's been reported early on to where, you know, more and more victims aren't being, you know, taken advantage of. So, yeah, the minute I just started talking about it, it just opened up all these like healthy situations for me to where I don't even feel shameful or that this is this dark cloud over my life. You know, I look at my entire life now. I'm like, this was something that happened to me that was not good. It was not of God, but it's not just going to like cast this dark shadow over my entire life. And the beauty that God has done all in the midst of that, it's just amazing. You know, I tell people too that, I mean, I wouldn't, just like your friend said, you know, I'm glad I got cancer. I'm not glad I was abused, but I also don't know what my life, where it would be right now if I hadn't been and been reconnected with God. And I think God just puts the right people in place for that stuff to happen. So all of whatever we're dealing with, you know, we have to just take a step and do something or it's just going to tear us down. You know, my wife unfortunately had a miscarriage a couple weeks ago, and it would have been our third child. And a week after we saw the heartbeat, it was just terrifying. Mm. And we both drove there separately because we were going to go off to work that day. And as we both headed home in our separate cars, I put on Good Good Father on the radio. And that's not something I would have done 10 years ago. I would have been yelling at God. I would have been like, why'd you do this to us? And that's absolutely not true. Like he designs us so perfectly, and we live in a broken world, and that's why that stuff happens. And he is going to show amazing things out of that darkness. And that to me is just a testimony of what I've gone through at CSD. Mm-hmm. I would not be that mature spiritually to put on Good Good Father during one of the darkest moments of my life, you know?
Yeah.
So I know he's there with us, and he gives us gifts in abundance every single day. So we have to continue to lean into that.
I want to talk a little bit about CST. We keep alluding to it. I think for anybody that's considering going to that, what I think is the beauty of that class, and having gone through it myself, what I appreciated about it when I first jumped into it was it gave me an understanding of what had happened to me going through a trauma, that my reactions physically, mentally, spiritually, everything, the whole person, were all very normal responses. And the responses run the gamut. Like everybody responds to trauma differently. But it helped me understand myself coming out of that. And, or not coming out of that, I should say, but helped me understand how I process the trauma in unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
And so it was receiving a lot of, I'm just getting a lot of information because the class is very one way, right? You're not sitting there exposing your soul to everyone. You're literally learning about how trauma has affected you. It was affirming for me.
Yeah.
Like for you, like, did you have that same sort of experience in CST when you went in and was getting all this information thrown at you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a defining moment for me was that slide that one of the doctors put up there about, hey, here's some of the signs and symptoms that you may have experienced if you've gone through sexual trauma, you know, and it was all over the place, like anger, you know, promiscuity, lack of confidence, confusion. It was just all these things. I'm like, yeah, that's the life that I've been living. But also there was comfort in that, knowing that I'm like, okay, like this isn't who I was just designed to be. Like there's a reason behind all this. So how do I kind of get behind it and start, you know, cutting out all the muck that's been in the way of me, you know, being the person I'm intended to be. And we call it kind of this fire hose of information. It's kind of like what you described, yeah. You know, and that's what it is. But the goal is after week 7 or 8, you have knowledge, community, and resources to take another step, you know. And we always leave that last group giving people some easy things to do, you know. And if anyone's online watching this or at home, they can go to crossroads.net/CST and email me. I realize not everybody on your fan base is actually connected to Crossroads, but I'm happy to help, you know, connect them to resources or just answer any questions around this topic. I think that God put me in this situation to just help people that may not feel like they can take a step, you know, and that are really hurting, because that was me at one point. And I hope that they can see the hope in my life that has occurred since I decided to be courageous.
So what would you tell somebody who maybe they are watching this, they have had sexual trauma, mm-hmm. At whatever point in their life, they are struggling with the hope that maybe they can get to a place of joy and freedom in their life? What would you say to them as far as how to take that first step and like what they can, what is really the end that God can give them?
Mm-hmm. Like Winston Churchill says, said, if you're going through hell, keep on going, you know, and I resonate a lot with that. I think it actually came out of CST, but, that's the ultimate truth, you know, and you can't just sit in it and accept it. You have to do something. So that could be finding a trusted friend to talk to. That could be really grilling some counselors to find the ones that actually know how to serve people around this topic. That could be connecting with someone at your church about, hey, what do you have around this thing? That could be getting in a men's group, a women's group. That could be reading articles, books. There's lots of different things. It's just like getting started. And I think once you get started and you get out of that pit and that feeling of just being stuck and that this is just the way it is, God starts to reveal different things and he gets really creative. Like he had me like just email everybody I know, which again, just opened the doors to all this goodness. So it may feel very small in the beginning and painful, but it actually just starts to turn into something special. I love the idea of, so I got the opportunity to go to Israel a couple years ago, and the pools of Bethesda where, you know, people would go to get healed. There was an invalid there who had been paralyzed for 38 years. And I think he just lacked a bit of faith and didn't understand actually how this whole healing thing worked. And you know, there's the story talks about Jesus coming over and saying, hey, do you want to be healed? He actually asked the man that, you know, and the man said yes, and he says, well, stand up, pick up your mat, and walk. And he did. And I think what's significant about that story is that it took Jesus to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Like the guy had to actually have faith in him for this to take place. And that's absolutely the truth. Because if I'm just going on my merry way, doing my life, working my way up the corporate ladder, trying to be a good husband, good dad, and just trying to internalize all these feelings I've had my whole life, it's not going to end in a good spot. And most likely it's going to end in some significant things in your life that are just very unhealthy. And you'll look back in your whole life and be like, man, this thing really did define me, you know? So do you want to be healed is a question that I was asking myself for a while. I eventually got to a place where I said, yes, God, I will do whatever it takes. And I leaned into lots of different things and continue to lean into lots of things. And so that would be my encouragement of just like, you have to say, like, yes, I want that. And then you have to do some work. There's a lot of work attached to it. But, man, will God, like, redeem it and restore it? Yes, he will. He wants good things for us, and he's going to make that happen.
Yeah. I like a quote you had said of working through the pain, like not trying to avoid it, but actually experiencing it. To sounds kind of counterintuitive to work through pain to get to a place of freedom and restoration. But that's exactly what you had to do, right?
Yeah.
And I think CST and just the whole process of allowing God in to heal and restore, like for me, took me to a really great place of experiencing joy, like real joy, not just like a few seconds here, a few seconds there. Yeah, I'm really happy I got a new car, you know, just all the little things that you think make you happy in the moment, but actually getting to a place of freedom, of real joy. And I would have never thought that possible in my life, except that God showed up and did some profound things.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable.
It's cool that he does that.
I
so.
And I wouldn't have met you throughout this whole process, you know, if we hadn't been connected that way too. So
yeah, CST is a good, good class, but just even at its base, it's literally about sharing your secret, knowing that the way you've reacted and felt and thought about things as a result of that trauma has been very normal, but that there is freedom at the end of it because that's what God wants.
Yeah. And even sharing your secret is just showing up. You don't even have to talk. You know, you could you could go the 8 weeks without saying a word.
Right.
But we hear from people each week that have gone through the process where you're like, wow, like, okay, I can hear how they were in a big, dark pit for a long time. But this is how God intervened and worked through that whole process, you know. And we coach all those people and listen to their stories before they ever get up in front of people because we want that to be a healthy experience. And it's just amazing to hear those. And then to hear from professionals, to pray together, and then just get some actionable next steps, you know, out of it is pretty cool.
It's really cool. Well, thank you for sharing your story.
Absolutely.
It's a wonder how God moves and does things and surprises us with just what we need when we need it.
Yeah.
But thanks for your time.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Conversations of Hope podcast. Stories of hope as told by those who live them. Music by Lauren Dusky. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2022 by Parable Road.